Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk, given by Lama Kathy Wesley, is entitled Path of Compassion, Path of Bodhisattvas, Part 2, The Bodhisattva Vow. The aspiration to be of benefit to others is the beginning of our path of transformation, but we need to walk the path by developing our love and compassion. The Bodhisattva vow gives us a practical framework for changing our attitude day by day and gradually accomplishing our goal of compassion and wisdom. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning, good morning. When I was growing up, I was part of a Christian congregation, and the pastor used to make remarks because there were two times of the year he could always count on seeing his parishioners. One was Christmas, the other was Easter. And for the Buddhists, it's Losar. It's the Tibetan New Year. And so I'm so happy that you're here with us today. And I want to thank you so much for coming. And I'm so happy that the last few days have just been really remarkable and good. And I want to tell you a little bit about them. And that is that yesterday we had a refuge taking event at Center for Pragmatic Buddhism. And there were about 25 people there, and about 15 of those people took refuge yesterday. And it was a remarkable experience, and people came away from it thinking and feeling and telling me that they were really happy to have gotten together with other people on that day and taken the refuge vows, starting their first steps on the Buddhist path, taking the Buddha as their teacher, the Dharma as their path, and the Sangha as their community. So I want to welcome our new baby Buddhists. Sorry, didn't mean to call you babies. That's not a good word. But babies are new, fresh, and nice. So if you want to put your hand up, who took refuge yesterday? Yay! Thank you. Welcome, everybody. Yay! Thank you. This is the only time I will embarrass you like this. So I mean, it's, you know, don't you love it when your parents do stuff like that? You're meeting a new friend, and then they want to show embarrassing baby pictures of you to your new friends. I'm sorry. So anyway, that's the last time you'll have to do that. So this year. Anyhow, but well, you're going to have, I just want to advise you that the people who have taken refuge yesterday, we may have a job for you later on. Because every year during the Losar Sunday celebration, there is we have the swearing in of new officers for the year, and the oath of office is witnessed by the people who took refuge most recently, because they are our family, and they are our reason for being. And so because of that, you might just think about it. We may have you all get together. I don't know what we'll do. We'll see. We may take a volunteer or whatever, but it's our custom, because we serve the people who have never been here. A number of years ago, people said to me, well, why is it that you have all of these introduction to Buddhism classes? Why do you have all of these? Because sometimes new people will come for a while, and then they don't come for a while. And, you know, but what about all of us who've been here for a long time? What about us? And so I said, well, okay, I hear that. And so I will commit to offering more opportunities for practice for people who've been here for a while. But we have to understand that we really are here especially for the people who are trying to connect and learn about meditation and Dharma. We're especially here for those folks, because I remember how it felt to not know meditation and to not know about Dharma and to want to know. And I found here in this place, I found real people who could speak to me from their own personal life experience about Dharma, and it meant a lot to me. So if we can be here for the next generation of practitioners, this is like the very best thing we could do. So I want to thank all of you who were part, who have been part of our meditation instruction group over the years and who've attended the classes and whatnot. So thank you very much for being here. And in addition, at the outset here, I'd like to recognize the two. We had four people finish the Introduction to Buddhism course, and I'd like to recognize them, two of them now, because we recognized two last week, and then we're going to recognize two this week. As you know, we have eight classes, nine if you count the one that's offered on fifth Sundays. And people who've completed the eight courses, we decided this past year to start honoring them for their commitment, because it does take some commitment to attend all eight classes, because you might start on class number five and then have to collect all the rest of them, or you might start on class number one, or you might even start on class number nine four times a year, right? But you go through and carefully get all of them. So if you feel, for example, if you feel that you have completed your courses and you're not on our list for recognition, come and see me and I'll make sure that you get on the list. So with no further ado, I'd like to show you what we offer to people who have completed the classes. This is a small bag, and inside the bag is a copy of the 37 Practices of a Bodhisattva. These texts were blessed by the 17th Karmapa. We still have a few of them left. And so you have, I'm joking with the people who finished the course, and I'm saying, oh, by the way, this is your next textbook. Learning How to Be a Bodhisattva is your next textbook. And it's inscribed in the front as being a gift for completing the courses. So thank you for that. And then a small packet or a small brocade pouch to hold your small wrist mala that is included. And there's also a protection cord that was blessed by Sita Rinpoche inside each one of these. So I'm going to ask those two folks who are here today to come forward. That'd be James Mays and Garrett Tsui. And if you'd come forward, I give you your packet.
Okay. And you can wear the protection cord around your wrist or around your neck, whichever you prefer. And here's your text. Good luck.
Thank you.
And you can sign up for mentorship now, and we'll help you get through that.
Wonderful.
Okay. And here's the other.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Yeah. All the best. Okay. Thank you. For some reason, I put them inside the book. I'm not exactly sure why I did that, but you can wear it around your wrist or you can wear it around your neck, whichever is best. And so here's your text, and here's your mala and pack. So thank you. Okay, thank you. Good luck.
Okay, so those are our announcements for today. At least this part of the program. That's the announcements for now. Now, I have because we have so much to do today, because it is Losar Sunday, and as you can see, we have the beautiful Losar Shrine put together by Jelaine Goodrich and our entire Shrine team. Hi, Olivia, and put it all together and made it all for us, and it's even kosher. It's even kosher in that, you know, we can't put those deep fried Tibetan cookies on the shrine, but we've got lots of matzah. We've got lots of matzah, and we even have a challah. So we have done kosher versions, including the, I don't know if that's Manischewitz or Kadam in there, but anyhow, we've got everything kosher for Losar this year. So because it is common in Tibetan households and in temples for offerings of food and drink to be placed on the shrine as an aspiration toward having abundance and sharing abundance during the new year. And so in a few minutes, at the conclusion of my short talk, everyone will get an opportunity to participate in a sort of good fortune aspiration that is done in Tibetan temples, where the people come forward and make an offering to His Holiness Karmapa's throne, and then toss a little bit of wheat berries and tsampa in the air as
gently,
because we do have to vacuum. When we have our own place, it'll be different. I'm just saying. When we have our own place and we're doing the cleanup, it'll be different. But anyway, toss gently. I remember seeing a toddler one time. It just put the hand in the wheat berries and go like that. You know, give it like a baseball throw. You know, a pitch. Anyway, so we'll take little pinches of wheat berries and barley flour as a way of making an aspiration for goodness and in the new year. So we'll explain all of that when the time comes, but you know, you'll have the opportunity. And then I have small pendants to give everyone. If you were not here last week, you didn't get a pendant. And if you were here last week, you might get a second one. And then I'll be blessing everyone with that lovely green Tara statue. That green Tara, anybody who saw the old building or was in the old building might recognize this statue. It just came home to us a couple weeks ago. Tracy Turner, who lives now in Indiana, had been the foster mom for this statue, because when we brought statues and books and things out of the building that was damaged by fire, we didn't have a place to put them right away, so we had foster homes. People are so kind. We had all of our things living in foster care, and they're starting to come home now. And so this green Tara was actually damaged in the fire, but it now smells as sweet as a rose. And so I'll give people blessings with it as an aspiration for our return to our new building in the upcoming year. So that's a little bit about what's going to happen next. Now to the topic. Last week and this week, I've been talking about the Bodhisattva vow and the Bodhisattva commitment. And part of the reason I was talking about the Bodhisattva vow and the Bodhisattva commitment is because we're going to be doing a Bodhisattva vow ceremony this afternoon. This was like maybe the first time in all these years that I've been here as the resident teacher that it occurred to me to put refuge taking and the Bodhisattva vow ceremony at the new year. I just didn't think of it. And I'm so happy that I've done this, because it's very inspiring for people, because the first 15 days of the new year in Tibetan astrology are considered to be very auspicious days to begin anything new. And this is because these 15 days, which are sometimes called the waxing moon of miracles, because it concludes on the full moon day. This waxing moon of miracles is the commemoration of the Buddha's performance of miracles to inspire his followers and the followers of other faiths during a lengthy debate in India during his lifetime. And he concluded the debate by performing a miracle every day for 15 days. And so these first 15 days are considered to be blessed by the Buddha Shakyamuni, because these were the days upon which he performed miracles to benefit beings. And so I thought that it would be a good thing to do refuge and the Bodhisattva vow taking right in the midst of this period of miracles. So I'm just really happy that you're able to be here for this. Many people ask me, well, how do I know when I'm ready to take the Bodhisattva vow? So for the next 10 minutes or so, I'm going to address that question. Many people say to me, I love the idea of the Bodhisattva vow, but I'm not sure it's something that's appropriate for me. How do I know when I'm ready to take the Bodhisattva vow? And to answer that question, we look at the words of the Bodhisattva vow itself. If you remember from last week's talk, we talked that the Bodhisattva vow is a vow of training. We vow to train in something called bodhicitta, or the mind of awakening, the mind that wants to wake up from the sleep of ignorance, so to speak. And when we work with ourselves in such a way that we condition our minds with love and compassion, and we aim and motivate ourselves by the wish to attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all suffering beings, this is called engendering bodhicitta, engendering the mind of awakening. Bodhi means awakening and citta means mind, so bodhicitta, the mind of awakening. And Kempo Carter Rinpoche, in a talk last year, said that this wish that we talked about last week, the wish to liberate all beings from the suffering, the sufferings of this world, the sufferings that the Buddha called samsara, the wish to liberate all beings from the sufferings of this world is a very powerful wish. It's not like wishing to have something nice happen to us. It's because it has to do with the core of our being, our Buddha nature, the part of us that is capable of awakening. And so because it awakens our Buddha potential for the first time to take refuge and then to engender bodhicitta, these are considered very special opportunities. And so Kempo Rinpoche said that this wish to benefit beings is, it starts an engine of goodness. I think that's how he put it, a little engine of goodness within us. It starts to turn that little engine of goodness within us. And he said, and if we can maintain this wish to benefit beings, then it will get stronger and stronger and stronger, and then eventually become our inner purpose and our motivation for everything we do in our lives. He said it will start as a small wish and then it will expand and expand and expand until it becomes self-sustaining. And so this is why anything we can do to engender the wish to benefit beings, engender the wish to attain Buddhahood for their benefit, and every step we take toward engendering bodhicitta and engendering that wish to benefit beings, every step we take toward it is getting us closer and closer and closer to Buddhahood itself. And therefore, when we take the bodhisattva vow, we don't have to be perfect to take the bodhisattva vow. And in fact, we have to be imperfect because it's a vow of training. We vow to train as the Buddhas of the past have trained. Because the opening words of the vow after the refuge portion, in the refuge portion it says, I take refuge in from now until enlightenment is reached, I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Just as the Buddhas of the past trained in engendering bodhicitta and stage by stage accomplished the bodhisattva path, so too, now, I will engender bodhicitta, and I will train, and stage by stage, as they did, I will become proficient. So when we are taking the bodhisattva vow, we're saying, I am going to train as the Buddhas and bodhisattvas of the past have trained. And you might say, well, what is the training? The training is in what are called the six perfect virtues. Remember last week we were talking about the difference between aspiration bodhicitta, the aspiration to attain awakening for beings, and then action bodhicitta, which is the actions by which that wish is carried out and perfected. The aspiration we've just discussed, but the action is contained in the six topics of the six perfect virtues. Because if we practice these six things, then we are slowly transformed from unenlightened, confused beings who might be a little bit selfish. You know, no, not casting any aspersions, I'm talking about myself. But if we practice these six things, they increase our love and compassion for ourselves. They increase our love and compassion for others. And they also reduce our selfishness automatically. When we increase our love, we decrease our selfishness. And we increase our appreciation for other beings. So in this way, when we take the bodhisattva vow, we vow to practice these six virtues. And the six virtues are generosity, ethics, patience, diligence, meditation, and wisdom. And if you look at these six, they actually build upon one another. If we remember the Four Noble Truths, the initial teaching of the Buddha, he said suffering's part of life, suffering has a cause, suffering has a solution, and there's a path that leads to the end of suffering. In the second of these Four Noble Truths, he says the cause of suffering is clinging and fixation. When we hold on to things so tightly, we suffer. And so when we learn how to let go of those things, we learn to let go of the things we cling to, then we suffer less. So if we look at generosity, then generosity means letting go. Letting go of our attachment to things, people, ideas, and so on by generously giving them away. So a lot of folks have a hard time letting go of their physical resources because they fear they will not have enough if they're generous with their resources. So we're not being asked to give everything away today. When we take the Bodhisattva vow, we're not being encouraged to give away all of our possessions and go and live in a tree. It's not like that. We're being asked to give what we can, as we are ready. So for many people, the first way that they can be generous, and this is a true story, Kemper Rinpoche said, if you are worried about giving away your money, or you're worried about giving away your things and then not having them, he said, start by giving food to animals. He literally said this. He said, start by giving food to animals. Feed birds. Put food out for birds, and so on. And he said, and when you do it, recite mantras like the compassion mantra, Om Mani Pe Me Hung, and then put the bird seed out. And he said, if you do this, then it doesn't hurt you. And he says, and not only that, you don't expect thanks. So your generosity is very pure. Because when you give a gift to a person, you expect something in return. At least for them to say thank you. And he said, the animals don't come up and knock on your door and say thank you for feeding us. So that way, he said, you can start with the simplest kind of generosity that is not painful to you. And then gradually, as time goes along, you might get more generous. Like you might be generous enough at some point to listen to an older person who says the same things over and over again and not be upset by that. That's generosity with your time. And then there's like generosity with your compassion for people who irritate you and so on. And then there's there's all kinds of generosity. Then there's the generosity that is called giving fearlessness, which means protecting those in danger. Now, you might not be able to go out like a superhero and pull people out of disasters. We're not necessarily talking about that. We're talking about seeing a worm on the sidewalk and moving it to the grass. That's what giving fearlessness is said to be. That's the second kind of generosity. The first is material things. The second kind of generosity is the giving of fearlessness, protecting someone from danger. The third is the giving of dharma. Now, you're not going to be required to go out and evangelize. That's not our jam. That's not what we do. But what you might do is you might try to be a good dharma person and teach by example. And or if people ask you questions and you know the answer, then you might actually answer their questions about dharma. Because for many of us, that's how we begin to share the Dharma, is when people ask us questions and we know the answer. You see, this is very important. If you don't know the answer and you start talking, it's probably not going to be beneficial. But if you do know the answer, but then you refuse to answer because you think, well, I'm not good enough to answer this question, then you got a problem. We have to be generous with the Dharma that we know. We can share what we know. We can't share what we don't know. So keep it simple. And that's generosity. That's the first of the virtues. The second is patience. If we're generous, it's easy to be patient. And you can be patient with individuals who are difficult. You can be patient with yourself and your own imperfections. You can be patient with situations and organizations and all kinds of things. By practicing generosity, it's easy to be patient. And because patience is the antidote to anger and irritation and resentment. And if we learn how to be generous, then it's easy to learn how to be patient. And then if we're generous and patient, it's very easy. I said ethics. Ethics is actually the second one. Patience is the third one. So I got it out of order. If you're generous, then it's easy to be ethical because you have already learned how to respect other people and not take things from them, but rather give things to them. So you'll understand that being ethical and acting ethically toward people it provides stability for you, and it provides stability for society, and it provides stability for other people. They will actually begin to trust you if you are acting ethically with them all the time. So if you're generous, it's easy to be ethical. And if you're ethical and generous, then it's easy to be patient. So I got those out of order. So it's generosity, ethics, and patience. And then if you are generous and ethical and patient, then diligence is a snap. It's very easy to be diligent in your Dharma practice when you realize that your meditation practice is what's actually going to move you forward to benefiting others. And if you are generous, then you have an openness of spirit. And if you're ethical, you have stability in your mind. And if you are patient, then you're willing to undergo whatever hardship it takes to actually practice, which means you practice even when your leg hurts. You practice even when you're in a bad mood. And you practice even when it's not easy for you. And so that kind of diligence in practice comes from being patient with yourself and with practice. And then if you are diligent, then meditation becomes so much easier and you can actually perfect your meditation. And if you perfect your meditation, wisdom is the result. And so in the great book by Gampopa, The Jewel Ornament of Liberation, which is sometimes called the Ornament of Precious Liberation, in this book, Gampopa says that if we practice these six virtues, generosity, ethics, patience, diligence, meditation, wisdom is the result. Attaining Buddhahood is the result. And then our wisdom and understanding of the nature of all things can go back and inform our generosity. We can give without reference point. We can be generous from a place of understanding the nature of all things and being generous in a non-conceptual, non-referential way. Same with ethics, same with patience, same with diligence, and so on. So Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, in his book, Dharma Paths, says that the six perfect virtues don't really become perfect until we attain the first level of bodhisattva awakening. Because until that point, we're just acting as if we are bodhisattvas. We're not quite there. We're bodhisattvas in training. We should wear the sign on the back. On our back, bodhisattva in training, you know, student bodhisattva, like student drivers. And then if we can do that, if we train gradually in this way, we can become proficient and become Buddhas. And so if you ask, am I ready to take the bodhisattva vow? The answer is, if you're ready to undertake the training, which requires us to be self-honest. We have to be honest with ourselves about how much generosity we really have, how much ethics we really have, how much patience we really have, how much diligence we really have. If we are able to be honest with ourselves and every day try to get just a tiny bit better, then we're ready to take the bodhisattva vow. Because the way you practice once you've taken the vow is that every day, at least in the morning and definitely in the evening, we would go back over the previous 12 hours and say, who did I help and who did I benefit during this time? And then when we thought about the benefit that we've done for others, we rejoice in that and make the aspiration to do more benefit tomorrow. Or in the next 12 hours. And then we also have to say, how did I harm beings in the last 12 hours? And then we have to say, okay, I did this, this, and this, and I regret those, and I will do better and harm less tomorrow or in the next 12 hours. And so this kind of self-honesty is hard. It's not easy to be honest with ourselves because it's easier to kind of maybe be evasive with ourselves, possibly for the reason that sometimes we overreact when we do things that aren't right and that we kind of take that invisible stick and give ourselves a smack on the top of the head. And a certain amount of self-discipline is necessary, but not too much. And so learning balance in rejoicing in our goodness and regretting our wrongs, learning the balance in looking at ourselves honestly is part of what we're learning in the Bodhisattva way. We're learning how to be just hard enough on ourselves, but not too hard. And to also notice the things we do that are good and correct and rejoice in those. So gaining balance in our behavior and gaining balance in how we see ourselves, all of these things are important for practicing the Bodhisattva way. So if a person is ready to undertake that kind of training, it's time. Because it may take us several lifetimes to kind of get it right. So if you want to start now, that's fine. Anyway, I probably shouldn't do this, but I'm going to ask if I'm going to take two questions in case you have questions, and then we will adjourn to the LOSAR activities. Does anybody have a question about what we've talked about? So if there aren't any questions, that's okay, but going once? Going twice? All right. So this concludes the description of taking the Bodhisattva vow. And then after the conclusion of our LOSAR Sunday program, which will start shortly, after the conclusion of that program, if people want to stay behind, I'll be doing the Bodhisattva vow ceremony at 1 o'clock this afternoon in this room. And it will be followed immediately by a handing out of copies of the Bodhisattva vow, along with an explanation of how to maintain, how to do that self-reflection that I spoke about. And so that will happen afterward at 1 o'clock. Okay, so let's sit quietly and dedicate the goodness of this session. We dedicate the goodness of this session to all who suffer. May all beings be free from suffering, come to happiness and then to Buddhahood, and coming to Buddhahood, may they emanate in all directions and benefit sentient beings endlessly. We dedicate the goodness with this thought in mind. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.